Hello. This is not how we usually start an Island Demeter episode, but one of the things I have been very interested in doing from the beginning of this podcast is to, critical play. That was one of the sort of the goals of doing this was to play small, weird, queer things and also to genuinely engage with them. And season two has been a very different experience in a billion different ways that I'm sure we will or will have gotten into if we do a first episode that is a recap of the whole season like we did last time. Part of critical play, I think, is making very clear what our failings are as storytellers, as actual play players are, and even more than critically engaging with the system that we are engaging with. This is why I, as the editor, also leave in a lot of stuff that is like, you know, rules confusion, because that's a problem with both us as players and the system, more often than not. But this is a sort of self-critical moment, right? I have been running this Rue Detectives game now for 7 months. I know it's going to be like 5 episodes when it comes out. It's been a long year. And one of the things that I have been reflecting on as I have been running this game is that I have done an okay job of talking to players about what they're interested in, what animates them about the game we're playing, but I haven't always done a great job. And so for this very brief introduction, I'm bringing on Adam. Hi, Adam.
Hi, B.
And we're going to sort of break from the rules of Rue Detectives. And basically, we're going to establish the mystery ahead of time, because the thing I have noticed as we've been playing these games is that the mysteries haven't mattered very much, and that's like a fault of me as a GM. I haven't been able to come up with shit on the spot in a way that the game requires. So instead of imagining that I can just magically figure out how to do that next time, I wanted to bring Adam on, who is playing Marvin Cry in the Rue Detectives game that you've been listening to, I'm sure. I hope you've been listening to it. If you just jumped in to the introduction of Mystery 3 out of nowhere, that would be, I mean, a choice.
I mean, you can do whatever. We're not going to stop you, but you will be very confused.
Absolutely. So I have had conversations with Adam outside of the context of the game, and we've talked about like what's Marvin's interest, what's Adam's interest, and we kind of decided that a thing that might be useful is to talk about the mystery ahead of time, rather than playing the game as written and rolling the mystery and then just immediately trying to figure it out. So, in this final arc, I was trying to reach out to people more specifically and talk with them, and the thing we came to was, like, it might be fun to record a bit of a thing where we just talk about what the mystery is by rolling it on the table that the game provides. And of course, I am incapable of saying, let's just do that simple thing. So I decided we should have, like, a little scene. And you know, before we started recording, Adam, you mentioned something. Did you come out of the last session with the impression that Marvin has a bit of a crush? Is that right?
Oh, I don't know. It might be something blossoming underneath the surface. It's definitely a possibility. I think we should leave all options on the table.
Okay. So yeah, should we, I don't know, where would this be set? Are we still at the trattoria right afterwards? Is this like a few days after, or like what do you think? When would you meet up with Nancy?
I think what would probably be the most titillating is that after our encounter at the cafe or at Trattoria, we rendezvous later, so we have a meetup, maybe at a cafe again, to just, because she might have some juicy detail for me to go through, and Marvin also might be his twin.
So it's the same night, basically, you're saying. It was like, you get away from the cafeteria and then meet up at a cafe.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe go for a moonlit stroll.
Ooh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because y'all are in Lissasil. It's like the free town. I probably said this, but it's, Lissasil is just me writing Sicily with like, it like a, anagram.
You didn't, but that makes so much sense.
So yeah, it's not an island, obviously. It's like a plays off of mine, so it's very different. But, like, it's got those, like, beautiful white stone buildings that Sicily has. Gorgeous vistas. Like, I think they're, like, fake cliff faces, basically. Like, they have, you know, like, some buildings have, like, facades that look like the sort of, like, cliff faces you would see on a Sicilian beach. But, like, it's obviously not that. But, yeah, so you would Marvin hint at Nancy that Bess and George shouldn't come, or would Marvin be okay if Bess and George, like, came?
I think that Marvin would try to hint to do this on his own and relay the information back. Just so he gets a moment alone with Nancy.
Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect. Okay, so I think as y'all are on your moonlit stroll, Bess and George, like, tag along, and Nancy picks up the hint.
Mm.
Oh, yes. Oh, you want, okay. And at some point she turns to you and goes, like, I am a detective, so I do know a little bit more about you than I maybe let on initially.
Mm.
There was something you found. There's a controller in your pocket that, we'll call a mech.
Mm, yeah.
And Nancy goes, yeah, like, I knew that. That wasn't really a question, but...
I'm like, oh, yeah.
But she asks if she can see it.
Yeah. Marvin gleefully hands it to her. He's like, oh, my God, she's showing interest.
Mm-hmm. She like, looks at it for a second and is like, this is a special thing, but... But I think it's outlived its usefulness, given where I think I know you're going next. So, Bess, and Bess comes over, and Nancy's like, can you modify this and bring this back to Marvin tomorrow? And Bess is like, sure, I can get George to do it. And George is like, yeah, I can fucking do it. And Nancy's like, oh, thank you, dolls. You're the best. I cannot wait to present all our evidence to the inheritor of the will tomorrow at noon. You know, like some, like, Nancy Drew-ass mystery shit. like, on the way there, they will, like, be on a kayak, and, like, a car will fall into the river that they're in, and that'll be the end of that chapter, because that's how Nancy Drew books are written. But for now,
really?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God.
But for now, Bess and George, are taking your, little mech controller and going to do some modifications on it that Nancy has told them that they should do ahead of time. So what does the cafe look like that you all sit down at?
You know, it's like stone cobbled streets out front of it. There are some, like, string lights, like, some picnic tables that have umbrellas attached to them. It's a very, it's a cute, but, like, classy-esque, very, I'm just thinking, like, now that you've given this in picture in my mind, Sicilian cafe, mm-hmm. You know, maybe some people smoking cigarettes, drinking espresso at 9 o'clock at night, like the psychos they are. Yep. I've never understood that, but that's something for a different day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, you know, your cute, quaint little seaside cafe.
What does Marvin order? Do you order anything, or is it just kind of like a, like, sit down at the tables outside and hope they don't bother you kind of situation?
Well, Marvin offers to get Nancy something, and to look sophisticated himself, he goes ahead and orders a white chocolate mocha.
Oh my God.
you know, he's a 14-year-old trying to prove that he can drink coffee, so does the wrong thing. But does it with such conviction, you know?
Yes. No, not a... I love that, because, like, Marvin kind of hangs back usually, right? Marvin is kind of the, like, reserved one, and this is, like, Marvin, like, trying to flex a little bit. And just be like,
I'm just not knowing. Like, it's like the entry level coffee drink that nobody besides the 14-year-old would ever drink.
Mm-hmm. The clove cigarette of coffee.
Absolutely. You know what, government? Start banning that. Like, if you're going to ban something, ban white chocolate mochas. My God.
I think Nancy actually gets just an espresso.
Of course. She's like, okay, you.
She's been here for a minute. Yeah, okay. I also don't think she's, like, judging you, right? I think she is, like, is Marvin, like, cracking jokes? Is Marvin just, like, kind of, like, awkwardly...
No. Marvin is awkwardly trying to, you know, I think doing his silent, but trying to look sophisticated look.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not trying to overdo it. I can see him getting himself into even more trouble than he probably already has gotten himself into by trying to play a part, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, the amount of trouble he's already gotten into is pretty wild, given that he was almost murdered by, like, an adult fascist mine owner. So...
You know, things are easily forgotten.
Right. My impression of, like, Nancy is that she, like, she's both, like, you know, kind of, like, haughty and very, like, interested in her detective work, but she's also, like, kind of, like, genuinely good at listening and interested in other people, and I feel like she would kind of see Marvin, like, putting on a front of being sophisticated and be like, what's the right word for it? Like, not, like, mockingly, like, laughing, but, like, kind of just being like, oh, silly, you don't have to pretend. We are in the same field. We're colleagues, and I quite like
this. Aww. His heart's a flutter, but as this normally would happen to a shy kid, all they can do is just blush and say, well, I think highly of you as well, just batting his eyes.
That means the world to me. I just sip of espresso. I've noticed that you are focused in a similar way that I am, where you don't get distracted by the auxiliary elements of a case. You are interested, and I have something that I can't take care of, and I was hoping that you might be interested in looking into it for me, and maybe, you know, keeping me up to date on some of the developments.
Sure. Eyes aflutter, like trying to be as helpful as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to roll some dice then? Because we're about to make sure. I think she says, so there's been something happening down at the farmland. And then we have to roll dice to figure out what that is.
Okay. Three.
Motherfucker, for real? Did you really roll a three? Can you confirm that you rolled a three?
I confirm it is a three. I can count.
Do you?
It's late, but I can count.
Do you have any guess as to what a three is? What were the last two mysteries about? Do you remember? There was the mech that was...
Right.
And there was
the mech
that was...
Haunted.
Uh-huh.
So this is a haunting?
There's been rumors of a haunting or strange occurrence.
Haunting number three!
Motherfucker!
At least we're getting ourselves... We're giving ourselves a little niche, right? Like, this is good for our YouTube channel. There's some consistency. It's our brand.
Right, y'all.
It's our...
The Cry Twins have always been paranormal investigators, apparently.
I love that. I love that so much. Oh my God. You know, if I could go back and change things in my life, I think that that's the profession I would have pursued. Like, you know, I'm a night owl.
Uh-huh.
I love the paranormal. I don't get paid doing what I do anyway, so uh-huh. I might as well do something I actually like.
Might as well strap, like, a fake Geiger counter onto your, like...
Exactly. It's unfalsifiable. Exactly. Love it. Incredible.
Okay, so the second role is for where the mystery is at, and that's the one we always ignore, because I have a map.
You have your own idea.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be on a farm, which is not an option here. So the next roles are the suspects.
Okay. Two.
Two is an academic studying the case's subject. And then give me one more roll.
One.
A one. So this academic studying the case's subject has a family connection to the case. Okay. So we're going to do the exact same thing two more times.
Five.
Five is another NPC's rival. We have never rolled that one before.
So. That could be an academic rival.
Yeah. And then who are they?
A one.
Has a family connection to the case. Ooh, that's a rough one, I think.
Okay.
And then the third suspect.
Wait, isn't that the first one? Isn't it the first, the academic?
Oh, you rolled a
Wait,
one on
sorry.
Both of them. Yes.
So that's actually, anyway, that's perfect. Love that.
Okay.
Six.
Six. Someone the player characters know. Cool.
Okay.
And who are they?
I mean, there's a number of them. The lacrimal twins. We've met a lot of people,
sorry.
So we'll be fine.
Sorry,
Miss Bo.
I meant, what's the...
Oh, you meant... I see. You're like, hey, dumbass, roll. Six again.
Six. Ooh. So this
look
is...
alive, Adam, look alive.
So that's someone the PCs know who would do anything to further their ambitions.
Okay.
I love this for a very specific reason. Okay, so yeah, just to recap. Our three suspects are an academic studying the case's subject, who has a family connection to the case, another non-player character's rival who has a family connection to the case, and someone the player characters know who would do anything to further their ambitions.
Love it.
So, just to wrap this up really quick.
So the thing is that there's a haunting. Do we need to come up with the haunting right now, or is that something that you wanted to develop over the next little while?
Good question.
Because I've got an idea, I think.
Shoot. Yeah. Tell me about it.
So I was thinking that there are these two researchers. They both have research labs in the farmlands, but that there's a family dispute. Like, both of them would like to expand their research facilities, and there's an old plot of land that both of them feel like, okay, you know, like, some older family relative is passing away or is like redoing the will or something along those lines. And basically the rival at the current moment has more of a claim to the land, either through familial ties or whatever, just kind of the one that's being written into the will. But as of late, people have started seeing ghostly figures walking through that land at night. And now it's unclear whether or not they'll want the land or not and want someone to look into what is the source of the haunting or like what where could like the evil spirit or whatever be coming from.
How is Marvin reacting to this bunch of knowledge that Nancy is drawing? I feel like my guess is that at the beginning, Marvin is like still kind of blushing, but at a certain point, the wall kind of breaks down.
Yeah, I think the thing that would happen is that he would just get really intrigued because up until this point, there's been kind of like whispers of hauntings and stuff like that. And this one seems to be like what people are seeing is just much clearer, right? Like there's like ghostly figures walking around at night. And so Marvin is like intrigued by it because, again, always thinking of the YouTube channel in the back of his head. Mm-hmm. But this would actually potentially, like, there's like a clear haunting happening here and the possibility of actually getting something on film. So this kind of feels like the most intriguing of all of like the situations thus far. And then on top of that, he is hanging on Nancy's every word just because he also, you know, wants to show interest in the thing that she's interested in. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I think he's like, this actually sounds like a really interesting, could be an interesting story to tell through our YouTube channel.
I love this. I love this, which means I hate what I kind of have to do here.
Okay.
So I think like Nancy like gives you all this information, and I think like, you know, if this were like a TV show or whatever, you know, you'd see the like close ups of the two actors, like it would be the shot, you know, shot reverse shot kind of thing. Like you'd see Nancy like explaining like. And then there was this complication with the will that led to Damien becoming the heir apparent of this. And then, like, you know, reverse shot to Marvin kind of, like, going from, like, kind of dewy-eyed and, like, blushing to, like, you know, a little clearer, like, a little, like, oh, okay. oh, I'm following every moment of this. Okay, this is like hitting my interest. And I think there's like mm-hmm. The cut like closer to the end when like Nancy has finished her espresso like half an hour ago, and Marvin I think is still probably like sipping on a cold white chocolate mocha. Like,
it's the right temperature now for him to enjoy.
Fuck. First, like, there's that moment where like Nancy has like kind of like finished her unburdening of this like mystery onto you, and like with the full confidence that you can do this, and like she kind of notices, she's like, oh shit. And I don't think she like says this explicitly, but I think she kind of like lets you down really kindly, because Nancy Drew is like 18 years old and you're 14,
right? Exactly. Exactly.
Like, I think it's a moment where she's just kind of like, like, she sees in your eyes the, like, the infatuation, and she goes, she's like,
oh, honey, no.
She's like, no, like, you know, this happens. She's dealt with this before, and I think she just basically says, like, you know, Marvin, I'm really looking forward to hearing your updates on this case, and I'm very excited to know you for some years to come. I've been around doing this for quite a long time, much, much longer than it seems like for my age, even. And I see a lot of promise in you, and I think there's a lot of good in you. And I think, you know, I cannot wait to see you grow into the person that I know you can be. I kind of like went into Miss Beau voice there for a second, and I apologize.
Yeah, a little bit. That's a brush off. Yeah. Love it.
I think she's trying to be really nice. And, mm-hmm. like, encouraging in a way that's, like, not creepy. I think that's that scene, and I think we got
it.
Mystery. Okay, wait. Don't go anywhere. Okay. It's been a few months since me and Adam recorded our little intro to the third mystery. And we've recorded a couple of other, episodes, hunts. But I'm going to drop this in here because I had a realization. I'm joined by Ricky. Hi, Ricky. How are you doing today?
I'm doing real good.
Sweet. So this is.
I have to be honest and say that I didn't realize that you were asking me this because you started recording, and I was like, "Didn't we already go over this?"
No, it's just for the episode. I don't actually care how you are. No.
Oh yeah. Fair.
I'm delighted by how well it sounds like you're doing, honestly. But yeah, so this will be a recording of. We're going back to the OG Island of Meter shit. Me and Ricky are gonna play a single player game together. How we got Pill in the first place. Today we're gonna be
framing devices.
Framing devices, right. Yes. So today is gonna be the Gateshead Engine. It is a tarot based solo role playing game. Or sorry, here's the head or the deck. A solo role playing game about a machine and dangerous ambition. Seems right up our alley, I think.
Alley.
It's by Adam Roy. You can find it at ADNROY at itch.io. It's a hack of Alone Among the Stars, which is also featured on season one of Island Demeter. Twice, actually. Once just me, and once me and Charmy. And speaking of which, I'm actually, I think we are going to be playing Nonim, my character from the Alone Among the Stars game. I think that's the idea I've had here. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be creating a plot important thing for Rue Detectives and for the Iera Intera game that I still hope to run, that instead of being an interwoven thing with season 2 might just be season 3 if everything works out like that. But we'll get there when we get there. Okay, setting for this game. In the Gateshead Engine, it says that it's a single-player game set in an alternate version of Victorian England.
We are going to be not doing the Victorian England. Instead, we're going to be on the planet that hosts AO24, sort of a, I think, a sort of before the fall situation. The timeline doesn't fucking matter for what we've actually ended up doing, but I'm thinking of this as if the Rue Detectives game takes place in like the 78,000s, then the Era and Terra game was going to take place in the 1800s. This is probably in the 600s in that timeline. I think something happened between, say, 600 and 1800 that led to the fall of the sort of civilization that we are going to be talking about today, which I know nothing about other than that those facts. We're going to be making it up. I'm terrible at prep, if that's not been made incredibly clear throughout the entirety of Island of Meter.
Wait, so when did our first Hill game take place? Or like where in the timeline did that?
It's been like a year since I looked at that timeline specifically, but I think that was, I think it had been like a hundred or something like that years between the Pill game and the Echo game where the Cry Twins got introduced. And then it was another, and then it's a decade after that in the Rue Detectives game. So it's like the...
So Ear and Terra is before that.
Ear and Terra is like 70,000 years before that. Yeah.
okay, cool.
Yeah.
That answers.
Yes.
My question.
Okay. Well. And then this would be about 80,000 years before. Yeah. Cause the joke, the reason it was a joke is because you said something, I think you said something about it being the year boobs, which would be 80,085.
So stupid. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's great. I love that. Uh-huh. So, we should have just said the year boobs. Yeah. That's really funny.
Beginning of 2021, I had so many ideas, and the life happened.
Well, and to be fair, I think a lot of people had plans.
Yeah.
That didn't, you know. But hey, here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So let's start playing. To play only the following, a deck of tarot cards. I have one. I have my Crow tarot deck that I recently got, created by M.G. Cullinane. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but beautiful little art on these guys. The Hierophant is a Hierophant. Hierophant is my favorite drawing of a crow I've ever seen. I was playing in a game of Wander Home a little bit ago, and I explicitly made my character just be that crow. So I'm excited about these cards. We need a notebook and a pen. That's this audio recording. And we need a candle or gas lantern to write by, optional. I will not be lighting a candle, and I definitely don't have a gas lantern handy. Do you have a gas lantern handy, Ricky?
Yeah, we're actually in an old-timey 1600s hotel, and all the lamps are gas lantern. So.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it really worked out pretty well for this game.
Excellent. So let's go through the setup questions. Before beginning play, answer the following questions. Who are you, and why did you agree to build the engine? So I'll take that one. I am Nonim. You can hear me in season one describing Nonim. They are from a culture of spacefaring culture with no home base, and their cultural sort of imperative is to attempt to map space. I'm very fond of a metaphor I came up with in there about how because they sort of develop space travel before they develop the technology, like a cartographic system, their maps perpetually look like the way that when you're going to, you know, write a protest sign or whatever, and you realize you have six more letters and room for two, the edges get scrunched. So their maps just like... Their maps grow and grow because space is enormous, but it always looks like it's the scrunched up letters at the edge of a sign. Somebody draw that, please.
That's incredible. I love that idea. That's so good.
Thank you. But in the Nonim Learns to Mourn game, Nonim took off on their sort of like inaugural, like leaving the culture. Space flight. They visited a handful of planets. They were kind of a piece of shit in my head. They were like very parochial, I guess, is maybe a less judgmental way to say it, or explicitly judgmental. And sort of the arc that I took them on, or that they took me on, that Alone Among the Stars took us on together, let's say, was that they sort of started recognizing the value of life that wasn't just people from their own culture, but others. And that was where we sort of left them. And I think this is a number of years later. I think they have they? I think they probably met back up with their fleet and then went off on another journey. And they have found themselves on AO24 in the year 600 or whatever, where there is some sort of city that we're going to sort of discover together, and they found themselves in a position where they're going to be building this this sort of prototype biomechanical mech. Yeah, do you have any thoughts on why they would have agreed to build the engine, Ricky?
So when you were reminding me of that character, so they are they like a nomadic culture? Like, are they constantly on the move?
Yes, totally.
Okay. So if they're coming to AO24, it sounds like they agree to build the engine.
Interesting.
Like, it doesn't sound to me like it's their idea. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, it sounds like they meet someone there who they agree to help.
Yeah, I think that tracks. Maybe we go to the second question then. Who is your patron, and what, if anything, do you know about them? Why did they tell you they wanted the engine? So, do you got any back pocket characters for this? I'm imagining this is like, I don't know. Is this like a? Are we like in a Victorian England analog here? Or is this like a generally repressive society where a lot of advancements are being made? Or are we? Do we want to do like more utopian? Even we could. We could do some utopia. I don't suspect we'll see that very often in Island of Meter.
Well, I mean, that kind of makes me think about what AO24's like whole like history cycle has been, where it's this period of intense warfare and fascism, and then a period of like this really glossy facade of utopia that isn't.
Right.
Which is kind of how I think of Rude Detectives, or like Rude Detectives is kind of a step out of the utopia towards the encroaching fascism again.
Yeah, I think of it as explicitly like being in the midst of a counter-revolution. But that's been going on for a very long time. And so some of the utopian socialism that came out of the initial Berrigan game. That's set afterwards, right? Because Berrigan's a kid in Rude Detectives. So yeah, so there is movement toward, if not utopia, then at least a more egalitarian, socialist, communist society. But it's, you know, right now it's papered over with explicit fascists and you know, arch capitalist YouTube fuckers and all that.
And it's like it feels like there's kind of a constant push and pull.
Yes,
like,
totally.
The people who are always working towards liberation and the people who are always working towards being shit fascists.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know if this would color Nonim in a way that you don't necessarily want it to, but I kind of feel like Nonim maybe gets tricked into working for some type of like proto-fascist in this way. Like,
yeah,
like you said, Nonim come from this parochial society, or from kind of a parochial mindset.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if that tracks really. I don't know. Like, in my mind, the patron is like, the patron is someone who has really fancy, glossy ideas that point towards something sinister. And the idea that these are biomechanical mechs, that they're made of like living things. I don't know. I have this thing in my head I'm trying to piece together. So remind me, the biomechanical mechs in Rude Detectives, are they are like, they're made of like, not necessarily living tissue, but they're kind of like plants too, right?
Yes, they're specifically agricultural products.
So I'm like, what if there's something about this mech that Nonim is being asked to help make that like almost fills this void of like having a stable planet to live on? Something that points towards like a settlement for Nonim's culture.
Interesting. Okay. Like,
I don't know how to piece that idea together exactly.
Yeah.
Like a moving, walking, living planet.
Okay. Damn, you're maybe going way bigger than I thought. Okay.
What'd you say?
That's way bigger than I was imagining. I like it. Okay.
I think maybe that, feel free to say that's too big, because I know it has to be under far.
I mean, listen, everything you've said so far, well, first of all, I want to make it as clear as possible. In inviting you to play this game with me, I am no longer Nonim's author. We are shared authors. I might have a little bit more history, but like I think any idea you have as much ownership over Nonim as I do at this point, just to state that flat out. And then, yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of, like, the patron is almost certainly, let's say, on the right, sort of a reactionary of sorts, if not an out-and-out fascist. I like that idea because I don't think it plays into Nonim's previous characterization, and probably illuminates it better than I actually did in the game itself. And I like the idea of, yeah, Nonim trying to come out and, like maybe this patron reached out to them specifically. Like maybe they have a bit of a name. I think people know about this, the culture that they come from. It's very funny that I just said that Nonim has a bit of a name, because Nonim is literally their name, because I didn't say a name for them in the actual recording.
Very funny.
I think maybe they have a bit of a reputation as sort of a member of this fleet that is more interested in sort of settling down, if not like specifically than like culturally. And maybe they have they were characterized as not particularly good with machines in that game, but I think they've learned probably a number of things in the interim. And I like the idea of them being sort of patronized to build a like walking monument or like a planet-sized monument to their culture that sort of starts to bridge this gap between a nomadic culture and a more settled one, and just probably just fucking it up, right? Like yeah. That's why it's not a whole planet size. It's they're taking on this massive, massive goal with a shithead financier, and like they're not that good at this shit. They got some ideas, but and they'll take the job. But
yeah, well, and like maybe that even speaks to why they were approached. You know, like they're known maybe for having this opinion and this like desire to push their culture and society in a certain way, mm-hmm. but also maybe they're not really qualified for this job. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is some reason why this person is possibly taking advantage of their desire and naivete.
Totally. Okay. We should name this dude.
The patron?
Yeah. Guess it doesn't have to be a dude. Dude inclusive.
That's a great name.
Fuck. Okay.
Can we spell dude differently?
Yeah, how are you thinking?
It's another way to spell dude. Maybe we just switch the D and the E.
Okay. That looks horrifying. I love it.
It really does. Dude inclusive, that's...
we really got it in one there, huh?
Yeah, that was incredible. That's called synergy, baby. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. Yeah, why did they tell us that we wanted, or that they wanted the engine? It's probably just like cross-cultural synergy, whatever shit, right? Probably just a bunch of buzzwords. I don't think they're like expressing like an explicit evil take over the world style plan or anything. They're just like, oh, I really admire your culture and the work you've done, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for us to build some bridges or whatever. Right?
Definitely. Absolutely. And I feel like this will go with the idea I had, but I feel like it's accompanied with a graphic that shows like a very generic outline of a mech flying into a space realm, and then like it slowly turns into a planet in a very like wholesome, shitty corporate graphic.
Right. Totally. Oh god. This like didn't occur to me till just now, but I love that this is also... It's also kind of ties in with the you'll find a rainbow game, right? With Tingle Berrigan. When Tingle used their space magic to turn into a planet that like saved y'all from the black hole that was the God's Eye or whatever, and it became a queer party planet. Like there is something about this universe that's very interested in producing planets.
That's really cool, actually. That's a great connection.
Hell yeah. Okay, question three. What is your community like? What do they value and what do they fear? Seems pretty diverse, I want to say. Like, there's probably, it seems like a lot of stuff's going on here.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe this has too much, like, George Lucas prequel energy, but, you know, what if Mr. Inclusive...
Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's so fucked up. His last name is Inclusive. What if Mr. Inclusive is similar to Nonim, is gathering people from all these different places to come to this place and create this thing, all the way from like, you know, top tier designer, scientist dudes, all the way down to like low level grunt worker, like essentially creating another company town.
Yes.
But it's not a company town. It has a nicer sheen to it and a glossier facade.
What we're saying is this dude, like, you know, a couple decades after the event of this, wrote a very well-regarded memoir that somehow has been around long enough that Deus Lacrim read it as a child and was like, him, I want to be him.
No, exactly. I think that's
I fucking love
it. Like, wow, that is really... I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And you could even call it something stupid like inclusive... I don't know. I don't have the next part. I was going to say inclusive estates, but that doesn't sound like... that doesn't sound quite like fake community enough, but...
Yeah, I feel like it's like... It's something, and then the subtitle is like 75 ways to lead your most inclusive life or something like that.
Right? So good. Love that. Love it. It's like totally like stripping the word inclusive of any meaning.
Mm-hmm. Is the title itself just like the most like generic self-help bullshit? Like, you know, like whatever. I was going to say 45 laws of power, but that's a little too on the nose.
I mean, what if it's just The Inclusive Life by Dude Inclusive?
Yeah. Yep.
I can't believe it. I'm sorry. I'm going to say this like 18 times. I can't believe we named this motherfucker Dude Inclusive.
I cannot either.
Like, I think that's one of the best things we've ever done in playing these kind of games together. That's incredible.
The way that you chose to spell the name is, I have it. I just have a notepad doc open. It just says Dude Inclusive, and then a return, and then a tab, and then The Inclusive Life Memoir. And every time my eyes scroll across D-U-E-D, my brain goes, no, absolutely not. Should we, I feel like I usually don't do this, but I feel like it might be useful to specifically answer the what do they value and what do they fear? Like, just give the community one value and one fear?
Yeah.
So what are we thinking?
Well, I mean, I feel like I'm about to overcomplicate the one value, one fear, but it feels like it kind of changes across the class strata we just established anyway, you know?
Totally, yeah.
I feel like the closer you get to Inclusive himself, the more those values probably are closer to him, and the lower level workers are probably like, you know, I mean, of course there is like more, there is consciousness around those people, and they probably are, some are probably aware of like, or have suspicions, but I feel like the people who are less privy to the actual motivations of this project are like, they probably value this community of diverse people and diverse cultures and like this community of like, you know, everyone works together to make this thing happen, you know?
No, this is a great, this is a great thing you have said, Ricky. Thank you so much. Because what we're going to say here is there is a genuine community value of inclusivity and diversity, right? That isn't just like some PR speak from him. It is, but there is a core of it that is like genuinely true, I think, at all levels of this venture, right? Of this community that he's building. Yeah. It's for miserable reasons from his perspective, but he does genuinely value it, right? I think that's probably accurate.
Damn, I feel like we literally just established the start of this cycle for this plan.
Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, literally, it's the push and pull already.
Yeah.
And this is where it splits.
Yes.
Crazy.
So, is there, like, a good single fear that we might find throughout this? Is it just, like, is it, like, stagnation or obsolescence or something like that? Or something else?
I think that's there for sure. I think that's tied up into the fear that accompanies like uprooting your life to try this new thing that could result in like society, like literal society betterment.
Yeah.
In like possible liberation in this way of like, you know, because it seems like they're trying to create some type of like include, like we said, an inclusive, diverse array of people who work on some type of non-hierarchical project, but of course there is this intense hierarchy. So maybe the fear is like, what if I uprooted my life? What if I like actually endangered my family because this project fails to do whatever it's doing? You know?
Yeah.
What were you thinking when you said obsolescence?
Yeah, I was thinking of like, it seems like, although we're framing this very much in our, you know, our own world style, left wing, right wing, that the sort of, it seems like everybody in this sort of push and pull, even the reactionary elements are trying to push something active, if that makes sense. It seems like nobody in this push and pull is like, you know, there's no make AO24 great again style thing. There's very little looking toward the past as like a better place that we could return to. Everyone's like, nah, we got our fucking ideas and we are like actively pursuing them. So I was thinking of sort of in that sense, I guess, of like the sort of primal fear is that things will simply stay the same and that like all sides are being motivated by this desire to press forward into a new and better world. They just wildly disagree on what's better.
No, that's really good. Actually, I think that's really good because like, yeah, like you said, we at least haven't really established a history pre this on this planet. So there's not going to be like the nostalgia fascism or like how fascism tries to play off of like traditions.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll do obsolescence. Yeah. And I think that ties into what you were saying about like this fear of being uprooted, having uprooted oneself for only to fail and slide backwards or harm, you know, yourself and family and shit. Cool. So fourth question, sounds like you might have a specific thing for. The fourth question is, what will the engine do when it's completed and what will it change? This may shift during play. For now, decide what you think the answer is when you agreed to build the engine. Do you have some ideas about what this thing's going to do?
So this isn't necessarily a very logical thing, but I think they are building a planet-creating engine.
Mm.
One that they believe they can build in such a way that when they send it into space, it can anchor itself and like go through the process of creating a planet sustaining life, or of creating a planet that can sustain life.
Okay.
So within it, it has like organic plant life materials, organic like human, whatever. But I think what it actually does is eat and process planets.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because, I mean, that is that also, I mean, once again, this potentially has George Lucas prequel energy, but, like, what's Big Man Fascist in the future's name?
Oh, Deus Lacrim?
Yeah, Lacrim. His biomechanical mechs are resource hounds. They're, like, all of the, like, fascism on this planet has been centered around processing and controlling the resources of this planet, whether it's gold or
yes.
giant grapes or whatever.
Yes, totally. Totally.
And so for Nonim, like, the idea of just being able to create a planet in your ideal image, that would perfectly suit their idea of, like, their potentially narrow but, like, expanding idea of their culture and people. That's, like, very appealing to Nonim.
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of playing to maybe Nonim's, like, biggest faults in a way, you know? Because,
mm-hmm.
like, why grow as a person? Why, like, begin to understand the vastness of experience if you can create the thing that just sustains exactly what you want everything to be?
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And then the horror of that, of course, is that you can't do that. The way you do that actually is by destruction. It is by destroying the things that are different than you.
Yeah.
And using those resources for your own gain.
I love this. I love this a lot. Fuck.
I don't know if we kind of jumped the gun on what the game attempts to do, but
I mean, what we'll do is we'll play out a handful of scenes and we'll see what direction we end up actually going in. And what we have here is a really good framework for a game that might surprise us, but also hopefully won't take like 16 hours to play.
Oh, yeah.
should we turn some tarot cards over?
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm going to read from the book. Play. To begin, draw a card. Minor arcana represent developments or complications you encounter as you build the engine. The suit and value determine what happens. Major arcana represent major events or problems. See below for each card's meaning. Now, write an entry in your diary, begin with a date, and then recount what happened and how you reacted. Make the entry as long as it needs to be, from a single sentence to a few pages. When you're done, draw another card and write another entry. I'm mostly reading this just to be like, this is inspired by Alone Among the Stars, but it does away with all the dice mechanics in that game. So it's just one card, one entry, instead of, which is how I played it, Alone Among the Stars in the first season, which was wrong. It was incorrect. I had misread the rules, but that's fine. And then, yeah, just play until you finish the engine or decide that you want to stop. If your creation gives you hope, keep your diary. If what you've built frightens you, burn it. That's a pretty good...
So,
yeah.
You gotta burn your computer, B, if we don't...
Listen, if we fuck this up, that's like $1,000.
Down the train. Uh-huh. I don't know, I just said down the train. What the fuck does that mean?
Down the train.
as everyone says.
Uh-huh. That'll be in the Huey McGumphrey ear and Terra game. That'll be the...
That motherfucker would say down the track.
Okay, so I'm going to start pulling cards from this Crow Tarot by MJ Colinaire. So the first card is... Ooh, here's the thing about not really knowing a ton about tarot and not being super familiar with this deck. Sometimes wands and swords can look kind of similar to me. And I don't really know. I mean, we have a five here. There are five crows sort of flying around carrying long sticks. I'm just going to kind of skim through this deck real quick and see how literal they are with swords. Like if swords are just swords and then wands are like more abstract or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that seems to be the case. Yeah. All the swords I'm seeing here are like very clearly swords. Because I thought about this because I was actually just the other day looking through a catalog of tarot decks at work, and my coworker pointed out to me that one of the cards represented was the Five of Swords, but it was like a squirrel carrying a bunch of gems, and she made the point that it's a great one because the Five of Swords is that famous tarot card that I'm sure you've seen, Ricky. Of, like, the dude holding a bunch of swords, and he's, like, falling over with all the swords. Are you familiar with that one?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was like,
yeah. The squirrel with gems. That's really, I like that.
Yeah, it was pretty, I was like, damn, that is fun. So, it looks like we have here the Five of Wands. So yeah, got five crows sort of flying around in a skirmish almost, it looks like. Each one carrying a different colored wand, I suppose. For this game, the wands are self, your body, your psyche, your soul. And a five is a keenly felt lack. That seems like the right place to start off with Nonim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a little too odd. That's like really good.
Yeah. Do we want to stick with this game and do sort of diary entry style? Or are we kind of just, we want to be a little more freeform? I kind of lean more freeform personally.
Oh, so the game wants you to be like diary entry.
Yeah, it wants us to, well, specifically because you're playing alone, so that's a good frame, I think, just be like,
yeah,
you know, today I, or whatever. But I think we can kind of, we're probably not going to explore any action because there's no mechanics for, like, you know, getting in a fight or whatever.
So yeah.
Theoretically, you would just write about it afterwards. But I think we could be a little more open with it, unless you think that might be a useful constraint here.
I think freeform sounds good to me, and, you know, if we are so inspired, let's just do whatever we want.
Hell yeah.
You know,
the island,
if the diary entry sounds cool to do in a moment, we could do that. But freeform sounds good, especially since we're kind of like purposefully creating a thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've got a bunch of hours. Not a bunch. I have an hour or so on record of playing as Nonim. Do you want to take the first scene here? Do you got any ideas?
It's a keenly felt lack of self. Whether yes. that be body, sight, soul.
What if I proposed mm-hmm. something here?
Yeah, please, please.
What if we say, I drew that card for you, and I draw a card for me, and we both just take a minute or so and come up with a thing, and then try to sort of, like, pitch them to each other as, you know, a scene or two subsequent things or whatever. Does that sound interesting at all? When saying it out loud, I'm like, I'm not sure anymore.
No, that does sound cool. I think I might be a bit confused. So, like, I need to create or come up with some type of scene that would demonstrate that lack for Nonin.
Yes.
Okay.
And
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And so we'll try this on top. Of course, this is the card I draw. So my proposal was, basically, I'll do one card for you and then do one card for me. And we can, like, you know, take a second to sort of think through it and then either synthesize them or have multiple scenes just sort of going back and forth. And in service of that, I drew myself a card, which is the Queen of Pentacles.
Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh. Pentacles represent the engine. And Queen...
Temptation. So but holy shit, a temptation regarding the engine is uh-huh. pretty...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like it. That does feel like a thing that would follow up a scene about a keenly felt lack of self rather than necessarily dovetail with it, in my head at least. I don't know. What do you
think? I was kind of thinking, tell me if this tracks. Nonim's first step into the warehouse where the physical work of the machine is being done. They witness the machine for the first time. And it's almost like their heart drops. Because they witness a machine that very much like... It's almost like someone telling you that you are like fighting for a noble cause with a beautiful outcome. But you witness the violence to get there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Like the promise of the outcome does not include the actual blood on your hands.
How do they see that? Is that like, is it just like the physical presence of the engine, or is it like seeing?
I think that they can't really even piece it together, you know, like the excitement that they had stepping into this warehouse being like, I'm about to take the first step towards this goal. And then they just see this thing. And it's not even necessarily like the way it's built or how imposing of a structure it is. It is just being in its presence that, like I said, it just makes their heart sink as they stare up at it. And I feel like it describes a very keenly felt lack in their soul, where they're like, what is this? What am I doing? And maybe not to step on your toes, but I feel like that kind of can dovetail into the temptation, you know?
I think my immediate read there is that the temptation is an immediate desire to sabotage this thing in some way. I don't think they have any like concrete plans or actions they take immediately, but they're like, oh, this is a horror in a way that I had been led to believe otherwise. And while I still believe in the end goal of this thing, because I don't think they quite grok, I guess, the ways in which this is like truly a terrible project. I think they still have some of that idealism in them. But they're like, I think they're just gonna, they're gonna work slower from now on. They're gonna hide in the bathroom at work a little bit. They're not gonna pass on important information as quickly as they might have in the past. There's just like this sense that like they want this to succeed, but they don't want the cost of it succeeding. So they're gonna slowly sabotage it. Does that track for you?
I think that tracks. I want to push on it just a little bit and be like, maybe the temptation is. Because for me, like, this lack was a very gut feeling, you know?
Totally.
Like, they witnessed, like, vines growing up these, like, metal bits. And it almost feels like it's, like, pulling these metal arms down into a place of, like shackling them, almost. And...
Oh, I love that.
Maybe it's, like, the temptation is this... Once again, like this push-pull in their gut. They're like, witnessing this thing is horrific to me in a way I can't describe. And I am tempted to continue with this project despite this gut feeling. But I am also tempted in the other way of like... And like the way you described the sabotage is maybe not necessarily like consciously I'm sabotaging, but it's self-doubt.
Yes.
You know, it's doubt in the project that causes you to sit in the bathroom on your phone.
As always, just incredibly impressed. I love the way that you described the vines as shackling the machine in a very good inversion of the usual image of, you know, bounteous nature being shackled by technology. It's the exact opposite. And like, of course that would like fuck you up, right? That would send you spiraling and interested in both doing and failing, or doing and not doing. I love it. Yeah.
Thanks. Cool.
Cool. Next card draw is the Three of Swords. So we've got a growing danger, and the swords are authority. Sounds like we might have some fascists to deal with. Apparently every other card is... that last one was a face card. So then theoretically I'm dealing with the 21, which is the world. Pretty thick.
What's
fucking
21?
Yeah, the world is the major arcana. This card kicks ass. There's a crow sort of facing to the left edge of the card, wings up with a crown above it, surrounded by a wreath with infinity symbols at the top and the bottom. In the bottom left, there is a lion. Oh, there's like a like tree, abstract tree trunk background. And the bottom left is a lion. On the bottom right is a scorpion. And on the top left, there's a bull. So the world is, you hear rumors of a brewing conflict. It sounds like we got some good stuff here.
What was the first one again?
The Three of Swords, the authority and a growing danger.
Oh, yeah. Those go together really, really well.
Yeah, they do. Rumors of a brewing conflict. Do you want to get dude inclusive on the screen with the growing danger of authority?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought so.
There's something here
with the crown. Mm. Your patron and the crown. A growing danger.
Yeah. Right, yes. Good point. I didn't fully read it out. The sword suit in Gates Head Engine is authority, and then parenthetically, your patron, industry, the aristocracy, the crown. Capital C crown. Which, again, yeah, the world card has a crow with a crown floating above it, so...
Do we need a second to piece it out, or do you have an idea for yours?
Maybe I do the world first, even though we pulled it second. Because mine specifically rumors of a brewing conflict. So maybe that can set the stage.
Okay.
I think I'm gonna say we are we okay with a like week time jump here or something like that? Like a week long time skip, just to say that.
Yeah.
So Nonim's got some more experience under their belt. They have sort of, you know, they have done more while doing less, as the sabotage sort of goes. And I think like just on what's like an intimate public space for them. I think they like maybe we see them leave like an underground lab that they've been. Sort of tinkering with some chemical reactions and quick shot of them, you know, pouring a beaker into a Bunsen, not into a Bunsen burner, but over a Bunsen burner and like taking some notes. And then they walk up outside and they go to just like a coffee shop nearby, and they order an espresso, and they're kind of like, I think we're framing them as looking kind of like isolated because of this, the shit they're going through at work. They're not like, you know, saying hello to anybody. The like, you know, the barista pours them the shot without saying anything. Nonim puts coins down on the table or whatever, and just like sits down and kind of stares off into space. And we hear somebody in the background talking about how like, oh, did you hear that did you hear what happened at the docks? And there's just like a quick cutaway to like some, I think it's just, let's just do what I love to do. It's just like a student riot. There's like a university down there, and some folks in black bandanas are like carting around homemade Molotovs. And the rumors about the brewing conflict is there seems to be like a strike wave threatening, the company town, and it's being framed as, you know, being led by outside agitators. Just, you know, bring up, play all the classics.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Yes. So how does this translate into a growing danger with the authority?
I mean, you saying that makes me feel like it is, and maybe reaction to Dude Inclusive starting to like flex the authority he actually wields. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm almost thinking sort of like a Jonestown. Jonestown was supposed to be like this non-hierarchical community. I mean, aside from him being like the leader of it, the religious leader, if I'm not mistaken, maybe I am. Apologies if I'm getting it wrong, but I want to say it was kind of framed as like a, we're all working together to do this thing until it becomes clear that this guy is in control of them, that he wields power over them. I think that like maybe as the project continues, Dude Inclusive begins to shut people down. He begins to like, no, we aren't going in that direction. We are going in this direction because I say we go in that direction because this is my project. Why does the engine need this? How do I describe it? Do you kind of see where I'm going? I'm having trouble, like, pushing it there.
I think so. Like, so it's not that, like, yeah. So what you're describing is not, like, Dude Inclusive becoming more, like, erratic and power hungry. It's him simply being like, no, you work for me. Like, this whole fucking town works for me. And it's not a power trip. It's just, like, a revelation of the truth of the situation as opposed to the sort of collective fantasy.
Yeah, well, and in my mind, I think this was the track it was always going to go on. We are now in the stage of the engine's creation where he has to push it in such a way to where it will reach his actual end goal. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like he attracts all the people here by being like, look, we're this all-inclusive, like, non-hierarchical community building this really cool thing. And now that we are however many years or however much time into the project, it's like, okay, we are going to shave away some of this facade to push it more towards where it's going.
Yes.
And the people really paying attention realize what that means. They realize the facade, and that's why the conflict is brewing, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to pull two more cards.
Cool.
Ooh. We got you a King of Wands.
It's wonderful.
Wands, as previously established, are the self, your body, your psyche, your soul. The king is an end. So there's going to be an end to some aspect of Nonim, or I don't know, maybe it's the end of Nonim. Absolutely on the table. I'll pull one for me. Okay. I got the Five of Pentacles. That's a keenly felt lack regarding the engine. Yeah, this started going real hard, real fast.
Yeah, it did.
How are you feeling? You got any endings for yourself, for the self?
I mean, I think the thing that immediately came to mind was that, like, you know, the first cards we drew denoted or, like, described Nonim first experiencing doubt in this project in a very deeply felt and profound way.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the moment where Nonim has to make the decision. It's not the self-doubt pushing you into the bathroom too often at work or causing you to work less enthusiastically. This is Inclusive himself calling you into his office.
Mm.
Or no, hold on. So yours was keenly felt lack for the engine.
Yes, the Five of Pentacles.
Can I ask what you... Because I feel like for me, it's... Mine is Nonim confronting Dude Inclusive about a very concrete thing about the engine that they disagree with. Whether that's like realizing that it has this capability to devour and not just create, or what. Mine, I feel like, is the result of Nonim's choice while confronting.
One way that there could be a keenly felt lack in the engine is that Nonim could take something from it.
Ooh.
Yeah, maybe one day while working, they... Okay, I like this. Okay, so we have this vague image that I really like of the engine, of like this massive metal thing entwined with vines. And this idea that the ultimate goal is it's going to be like... be able to exit orbit and become a functional planet. So I wonder if there's almost a scene where like Nonim is like wandering through like a jungle for like a second. That like all the, it's just like, not, let's say like a forest more. Like there's a bunch of, like they're surrounded by trees. There's underbrush, there's moss growing everywhere. Shout outs to Rue Detectives. Got some moss coming up. Just when it seems like they are like, you know, just like lost in a forest somewhere, it's the tree cover breaks and they are, you know, inside of a, like the bridge of a ship, basically. And they see something, some sort of, what would it be? Would it be like some sort of mechanical thing? Some sort of natural thing? Would it be like a piece of code or something like that? How do you think Dude has snuck this ability to destroy things in without making it clear to the rest of the people here?
I think that something that's really weird and eerie about this machine, and simultaneously about some of the things you can find when you're wandering through the forest on this planet, is that the mechanical is natural.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
in my mind, when you see the engine do what its actual intended purpose was, which is to devour, you see this mechanical thing. It's maybe humanoid, maybe not. I don't know. You see vines crawl up this mechanical bit, dig into the mechanical, and then rip it apart, like pull it apart with force. Yes. And in the middle of that is an energy, a like searing, burning, devouring energy. And I think maybe that's what Nonim stumbles upon and recognize it. Maybe Nonim stumbles upon the natural occurrence of this thing that Nonim recognizes within the engine that they're building.
Yes.
And once again, it's like Nonim's never seen this before, but this is something they feel inside them as they are in this thing's presence. They can feel in them that this, you know, I'm not going to say evil, because I don't know that evil is a natural occurrence, right, but it is power. It is like, it is scary to witness. And that is not what Nonim signed on for. This is not creation. This is destruction. So what is the thing that Nonim finds here that they can... So you said something that they take from the engine.
Yeah. Is it just... Yeah, I can't... I was going to say, is it just this knowledge? But that wouldn't make a keenly felt lack in... I guess you could say, like, it's a keenly felt lack of confidence in the engine at this point.
And that the engine is maybe lacking what promise, like, Nonim felt it had. But I liked your idea a lot of being able to take something from the engine that Nonim can't confront Dude Inclusive with.
Yes, and I think we can be kind of abstract with this, right? I think it's like, you know, a power rod of some sort that like is glowing with that energy that you described. Like, it's just like, it's some piece that's not like, you know, the core piece or whatever, but is like important for powering one of the subsystems that to anyone who knows would be an immediate like, oh shit, this thing is, you know, drawing on some sort of raw power that we did not expect. This is not, you know, you would not include one of these in a hospitality ship.
Yeah, exactly. It's like finding a gun in like a produce aisle or something. I don't know.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
So how does the meeting come about? Does Nonim just barge in and like slap the shit on Dude Inclusive's desk, or
what's... Yeah. I think so. That's how I pictured it for sure. You know, I mean, I think a big reason why Nonim was included in this, like you said, is because their society and culture is well known as being this culture without a planet that is nomadic, and Nonim being someone more well known from that society, you can get a lot of buy-in by including them. So I think Nonim maybe has a relationship with Inclusive that would allow them to walk in, but they don't stop at the secretary. They don't stop and say hi. They don't knock. You know, they barge in.
So what's all this then?
What is this? And they throw it on the desk, and I think it like sears the desk. Like, the desk is like scarred by it.
This appears to be property damage, my good Nonim. Why are you here in such a huff? I've never seen such a thing.
Why is this in the thing we're creating? This isn't what powers it. This isn't fuel.
This is clearly not within our engine. As you have thrown it on my desk, where it is now causing property damage. What do you think you're going to get out of this, Nonim, making a scene like this?
Just for once, be straight with me about this.
Are you calling me a liar? I have told you nothing but the truth. I have told nothing but the truth to everyone.
You've told me nothing.
I have told you that...
I'm here to create something that can create a planet for my people. That's why I'm here.
Did I tell you that would be what we were making? I told you that we were making a machine that could turn into a planet.
You didn't tell me how.
You never asked. Guards,
Wait. Just so I understand. This thing will create other planets, right?
Of course it will.
But it'll use living planets to do that. I found this in the forest.
You are not authorized.
Not this particular rod. But I found something there that is... I can feel it in my stomach. I can't even put the words together because they don't form in my mind after being there. It's just a blank space. I can't describe it because the description isn't there. I saw it and it burnt a hole in my thoughts. Dude. This thing's going to and I think Donim kind of loses their train of thought the more they try to describe this thing they found and this like connection that they're trying to make between it and the machine, the more those thoughts just kind of fall out of their brain.
Oh, shit.
And they realize that they're like holding this thing that they had previously slammed on the desk. And I think maybe they look at Inclusive and they just turn around and walk out. And maybe that's the end of the soul in the self. This power doesn't necessarily just destroy and repurpose physical resources. It can devour so much more than that.
Yeah. I think maybe we linger a little bit on Dude as his guards come in. And so Nonim sort of, I don't know, would you say is Nonim like stalks out, or is it just like a meek retreat? Or
I think it's like you went to the grocery store and forgot why you're there.
Right.
And maybe Inclusive even stops the guards from like handling and just lets Nonim walk out.
I think the guards come up and lock eyes with Dude, and he just waves them in as like, don't bother with them at this point.
Yeah.
And he sort of gestures at this like burn mark in his desk, and he's like, you know, have someone take care of this, as though that was what he called them for the entire time. Like,
yeah. Absolutely. So good.
Yeah. Cool.
Damn.
This engine sucks.
Yeah, it's no good.
I think one more card.
Yeah.
One more card each. Sounds and good. Then call it. Because, yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, first card draw is the Four of Swords. Damn, you got a lot of swords. A four is a nightmare, and swords, as always, is authority. A nightmare about authority, authority as nightmare. We can do a lot with that. Okay.
Oh no.
Okay. We got ourselves another king. And it's the King of Pentacles. So it's an end to the engine.
Holy shit.
Fuck yeah. Tarot rules. Okay, so we've got a nightmare authority and an end to the engine on the table. Is Nonim just gone from this story at this point? Or are they coming back?
I mean, I'm being like kind of drawn to the idea of Nonim's really lost.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of painted this before as a choice that Nonim had to make. And whatever this thing is, whatever confluence of this natural weird power and Inclusive's horrible desire has eliminated that choice from Nonim.
Mm-hmm.
That choice can't be made. But I'm being pulled towards Nonim deep within themselves choosing to end this engine in some way.
Yes. Okay.
And maybe that's how the engine is buried so deeply underground.
Yes. Okay. Here's my proposal. I'm going to take the Four of Swords.
Cool.
I'm going to describe some stuff happening, and you should do the King of Pentacles, the end of the engine. And the only thing I would like, yes, I need is for it to end up underground somehow. I think this is a montage, basically. Leaning heavy into the filmic stuff today. I don't know why I'm particularly feeling it, but I am. But this is our first, I don't know, maybe be, can we say it's been a year? Would that make sense to you?
I mean, I drift towards like bleakness. I almost wanted it to be even longer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
A decade.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, enough for society to go, enough for the thing that surrounds this project to really be misshapen and fucked up.
Yes. Yes. So let's say it's been 5, right? So Nodum has been devoured for a half decade at this point. And I think that gives us enough time to say that, like, we started this by saying that, like, Nonim was brought in here specifically, right? That there's, like, there was some outreach that Nonim was, like, if not famous, then, like, known. And I think there was some repercussions there, right? That this person who was known as this sort of exemplary member of a community that was all about travel has become kind of a hermit, has become somebody who, like, doesn't seem to leave their lab almost ever. Yeah. And that sort of, like, you know, rumors started and they got, you know, the student revolutionaries have been, like, crushed and beaten back and reformed, like, 3 times at this point. And I think I think 5 years in, we're like closing in on the launch of this machine. And dude has been just more and more heavy handed with his own authority. And I think this is where we see the beginning of that push pull dynamic that drives AO24 for, you know, 80 centuries that we've seen, or like alluded to, at least. This is fucking running street fights with, you know, workers and probably some disaffected like as aristocracy types who, like, you know, are like, you know fucking long live the king, but we're gonna side with the workers because this dude has too much power. But like, yeah, it's fucking guerrilla street fights, like, through the streets. It's barricades. Let me wheel it back just a tiny bit. I think we established this by showing, we're going bleak. There's a demonstration outside of dude's office, a couple hundred people sort of being like, we can't live on the wages you pay us, justice for all type stuff. And there are gunshots and the crowd disperses. And then over the next few days, you know, it escalates from cops arresting people on suspicion of whatever to bricks being thrown through windows. The first major escalation is we see a prison on fire. And from there, it just goes harder and harder. This civil war within the city, basically. Riots, people dying on both sides. And somehow the unrest leads to it getting out on what Nonim had discovered, that this engine around which this town had been basically manufactured was not a beneficent thing, that it is meant as a way to literally turn planets into raw materials for production. And yeah, we see it go from just like street fights over just general oppression repression to coalescing around this sort of citywide desire to see this thing fucking burn. And how does it avoid burning and end up underground?
Oh, I love that, by the way. I think so. I want to retroactively say that I think the warehouse itself, like the thing that where it's housed, is deep underground. Okay. Like, it was built underground.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this conflict has gotten to such a point that one group within the conflict, like you said, the desire is for this thing to burn. And they fight their way down there. They manage to get past the guards. They manage to get past whatever. And I think at this point, Nonim works in the same room as the thing all day. Nodem doesn't go back to their room. They don't venture to the surface. They probably eat because the body has to, but I don't think there's a lot of conscious thought there.
Are they at this point eating like just like the fruits that flower off of some of the vines of this thing? And like,
oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Nonem.
And oddly enough, Dude Inclusive does the same thing.
Mm.
But like from his office, which is also down there.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dude Inclusive also never leaves. And also is never seen on the surface these days, which is amounted to like the conflict. You know, he's doing it, quote unquote, for his safety.
Right.
But maybe it's also been that way for a long time.
Right. No one can quite remember when they saw him. Yes.
Fine. As the conflict reaches the point where the engine is, there's a lot of them that get down there. I think the giant blast doors that protect the thing from whatever, they start to come down. And Nonem is sitting at their desk, and they look to the left, and they see a huge group of armed people rushing towards this blast door as it's coming down. And just as slowly as they looked at the group of people, they look back at their computer, and their arm just kind of falls down towards the computer, and they press one button with their pinky, and it leaves the blast doors up. And Inclusive is looking down at the machine. He's looking at the rush of people rush in. They ignore Nonem. They go straight towards the machine. And just as casually as Nonem pressed the button that allowed the blast doors to stay open, Inclusive presses a button that engages the machine.
Yeah.
The vines crawl what feels kind of slowly up these, like, you could call them legs, I guess, of this weird biomechanical metal. And they crawl up it to it and reach a sphere, which the other limbs come off of. The thorns of the vine pierce the metal and they rip it apart. And then this glowing green energy that, if you stared at it long enough, you might see the patterns of moss in.
Mm-hmm.
It just breathes. It exhales from the sphere. And everyone, all of the protesters that are there, Nonem, Inclusive himself, they're just swallowed up in this green, mossy energy that brings the entire facility down around them.
Yeah.
And then the machine is buried. And I think I want to really hone in on, maybe all of those people I just mentioned aren't killed by this force.
No.
Or the destruction of the place around them. I think there's something else to this existence now.
Yeah. We said devoured, but maybe absorbed is actually more accurate.
Yeah. Maybe devoured doesn't necessarily mean consumed. Maybe it means to become part of.
I love I love doing these one-on-one games with you. I love doing all kinds of games with you, but there was a particular moment when you were describing Dude Inclusive listlessly pressing a button where I really wanted to just jump in and say, and then it's gone, because that was what, that's like my favorite scene from the Mechs into Flashshares game. Do you remember that one?
Wait, tell me. Remind me.
You, Pill is like, has to erase some aspect of their mech. I think it's the dancing.
Oh, yeah.
And you, like, zoom in on Pill, like, typing some stuff in and then just, like, solemnly pressing a final key. And in the final recording, it comes out where there's just a brief pause and I say, and then it's gone. And you go, and then it's gone. Just the little echoes of work we've done together. And
I really wish I hit that. That sounds awesome.
Nonim and Pill have a lot more in common, I think, than I knew before we started playing this. And Pill and Deus have, Dude and Deus definitely have a lot in common. And we got all those consciousnesses out there in various forms.
Can we have a right-wing podcast in this universe called Dude Deus?
I think that's the bad ending of this. Rude Detectives, I think if y'all fuck
if
up
they end up being able to have a podcast.